Okay. The notion of doing tshuva for Lashon Hara is actually even harder than it sounds. Doesn't sound easy. You've probably heard the story of the man who came to the Rebbe, and he said, Rebbe, I spoke Lashon Hara, and I want to fix it. So the Rebbe told him, okay, it's a two-step process. First, I want you to take a pillow, rip a hole in it, and walk around the city. So he does that, comes back when he's finished, he says, okay, what's step two? So step two, the Rebbe says, now I want you to go around the entire city and pick up all the feathers that came out of the pillow. Back in the day, they used to have actual feathers inside pillows, so if you cut a hole in them, they're going to fall out and fly around the city, and the wind's going to blow them all over the place. So now, that's your job, go pick up all the feathers. And we can see the point that it's not easy to undo the damage. That when you say something, it spreads, and to say, I would like to unsay it now, I would like to reverse the effects, is already not simple. But it gets even harder than that. So, without trying to discourage anyone, although discouraging from getting involved in Lashon Hara is probably a good idea, but we never want to close the doors to tshuva, but it is worth discussing that there are a few unique challenges that are relevant to trying to do tshuva for Lashon Hara. Now, on the surface, one would assume that Lashon Hara is an avera ben adam l'chaveru. It's an interpersonal transgression. And we're familiar with the Mishnah in Maseches Yuma that tells us that averos ben adam l'chaveru, Yom Kippur does not atone. Ad shi ratzes chaveru, that you have to appease the victim, you have to do what we call bakashas mechila, you have to ask for forgiveness, and failing to do that, Yom Kippur is not going to be mechaber. So it would seem on the surface that that's the root here, that Lashon Hara is mevera ben adam lechaveru. So therefore, you should have to ask mechila. But it's much more complicated than that. There are a number of challenges that are present in this particular Aveira, which make it significantly more difficult. First of all, I should mention that normally when you ask for forgiveness, so assuming that you go through the process properly, so we expect that the offended party will respond in kind. And the Mishnah indicates that that is also his responsibility. That we say that the offended should not be an achzar, shouldn't be cruel. And the version of the Mishnah that appears in the Talmud Yerushalmi, it's a little stronger than that. It implies that there is an avera involved in not forgiving. So normally that's the way it's supposed to go. That if somebody goes through the process properly, whatever that means, could also be complicated. But if somebody goes through a genuine process and asks for forgiveness, so the other party is ideally supposed to grant that mechila. However, when it comes to Lashon Hara, even that part gets a little more complicated. First of all, he could ask for some type of restitution. Now, Al Pi Din, and you're familiar with this concept, you're learning Bava Kamma this year, so we know that when one is mazik somebody's property, so there is usually a chiyuv tashlumin that's associated with that. That's what the Masechta is about, that there's an obligation to pay for the damages that you incur. When it comes to Lashon Hara, it's usually not going to fit so well into that category, because assessing monetary damages is going to be a challenge. Even if you could put a dollar sum on whatever was the impact, it's really going to be a grumma. It's not going to be a direct mazik. So in the rules of Bava Kamma, in the rules of Hilchos Nezikin, you're not going to find a normal chiyuv tashlumin. So a bezdin is normally not going to obligate a payment for Lashon Hara. However, the Rishonim writes that the victim still has the right to say, listen, you want me to forgive you, I suffered some damage here and I need to be compensated. And that's a legitimate request. And should the offender refuse to do this, so the Rishonim discuss that there are various tools that Bat Din have in order to impose that on the situation. The Rashi has a few, the Rambam has different ones, the Tur quotes them both. So theoretically, it could involve more than simply asking for mechila. It's an interesting question. Nowadays, we don't seem to see that the Batei Din use these tools. We don't often find that there is any external enforcement on the Avera of Lashon Hara. I'm not 100% sure why. I once asked a rabbi who's involved in Dinei Torah, since the Rishonim, the Shulchan Aruch, talk about these devices for the Beis Din to use to address offenses of Lashon Hara. So how come we don't find that nowadays? And he responded that every Jew would be in Beis Din every Monday and Thursday, which is sadly probably true. But at the same time, it would seem that some of the more extreme situations, it would seem appropriate maybe that Batei Din should step in sometimes and exert some influence, because theoretically there is that possibility, and that's a situation that, who knows, maybe they could make a difference. But in any event, so that's one issue, that the offended party should have the right to say, listen, we mochel you, but I require that you do a little bit more to address what happened. Hi.
So then they wouldn't be considered an achzar if they didn't pay up?
That's what it sounds like, that, you know, and you have to assume it's got to be reasonable, so I don't know exactly how you define. Clearly, if we make the sky the limits, then the offended could do pretty drastic things. But presumably, the Beis Din overseeing this, if he came up with something reasonable and something appropriate to what actually happened, so then that's something that there should be a system for. So in any event, on top of that, it gets a little harder also, because in addition to this consideration of achzarias, so, or separate from this consideration of achzarias, the Yerushalmi has a statement that there is an exception, that when it comes to motzi shemra, a person has the right not to be mochel. Now, parenthetically, we're not 100% sure what motzi shemra means. The phrase motzi shemra, as it's used after the Sefer Chafetz Chaim and perhaps after the Rambam, we use motzi shemra to distinguish lashon hara is truthful remarks that are harmful, and motzi shemra is what we would call slander in modern terminology, complete falsehoods. So that's the usage that you find in the Chafetz Chaim and perhaps in the Rambam. It's not clear that Chazal used that word that way, used the phrase that way. So when the Gemara uses the expression motzi shemra, I don't know exactly if to translate it like slander or to translate it as something in the Parsha of Lashon Hara. For example, Rabbeinu Yonah's understanding of the difference between Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra is different than the way the Rambam and the Chafetz Chaim say it. He understands the difference as a question of degree, that Lashon Hara is your basic everyday kind of Lashon Hara, while Motzi Shemra is when it gets to enough of a level that it actually changes someone's reputation, as the phrase indicates, Motzi Shemra. So we're not sure 100% how to interpret the phrase, but it appears in the Yerushalmi, and then in the Mordechai, and then in the Ramah, so it could have changed meaning along the way, but some type of slander slash Lashon Hara, there is a legitimate position that the victim could say, I'm not going to be mochel. And why is that? So the Magen Avraham explains, because the victim could say that maybe, or likely, there are people who heard the initial offense, and they didn't hear the correction. Like we always say about the newspapers, that the bad stuff is on page 1, and the correction is in the bottom corner of page 32B. And so people are going to see the first thing, and they're not going to see the second thing. So the victim has a right to worry that the damage is still going to be done. People aren't going to hear the corrective remarks. So if that's the case, that's actually pretty scary, because the suggestion here is that if one cannot undo the damage of an avera, so then the offended has the right not to be mochel. And that probably applies to many other situations, not just Lashon Hara or Motzi Shemra. We can imagine other averos where you can't really undo the impact. So that's a pretty impactful statement to say that in these circumstances there is not an obligation to grant mechila. So that's something that needs some careful consideration. But in any event, the Aruch HaShulchan writes that if the offender has gone through a genuine process and really is trying to do everything he can to offset his initial action, so then it's really appropriate for the offended to be mochel, despite this right that we're giving him, it still would be right to be mochel. Okay, so those are some off-the-bat challenges that come up in this avera. But there are a few other ones also. One that's worth mentioning is that sometimes a person speaks not about an individual, but about a group of people. Because we have the impression that it's less harmful to talk about a group than to talk about an individual. Presumably we think that because if anyone gets offended when we talk about a group, we can always say to that person, oh, I didn't mean it about you, you're the good one. I meant it about everyone else, you know, they're the ones I'm talking about, but you shouldn't be offended. So that's probably the attitude people have when they talk about groups. But the reality is that it is harmful, and in fact possibly more harmful than speaking about individuals. And that's what the Chafetz Chaim writes, that to speak about a group is more harmful than an individual. And you could understand why. In addition to the fact that it's simple math, you're multiplying the amount of people who are the subject, but it's also even less likely to be fair. If I say something about an individual, it's possibly unfair, it doesn't really reflect their entire personality. All the more so if I speak about a group of people, so I'm all the more likely to be saying things that aren't fair to people who are in that group. So that constitutes Lashon Hara as well, and that poses a greater challenge to Mechila, because how are you even going to pose the question? How are you going to find all the people who you spoke about in order to get them to forgive you? So that's an even greater challenge, and that's another reason why this is an Aveira that has certain particular obstacles when it comes to obtaining Mechila. But those are just the starters. There is yet another issue involving Mechila that is the subject of a very well-known machlokes, of a major, major debate between two gedolei olam, between two titans in the field of interpersonal halacha. And that would be, on the one hand, the Chafetz Chaim, of course. If you're going to talk Lashon Hara, you have to talk about the Chafetz Chaim. And on the other hand, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the founder of the Musar movement, the one who really directed attention towards midos and towards character. So they were on opposite sides of this issue. And the story has it that the machlokes was so significant that it led to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter declining to give a haskama to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. That even though one would have thought that this would have been a sefer he would have loved, and indeed, it's important to emphasize, there are many indications that he very much did love the sefer Chafetz Chaim, but the claim is that Rabbi Yisrael declined to give a haskama to the sefer because there was one psak that he disagreed with, and was afraid that his haskama would be seen as endorsing that psak. The Talmidim asked him, said, Rebbe, why don't you write the Haskama anyway? And you'll put a little footnote there that says, by the way, on page 126, there's a psak I disagree with. So his response was that nobody reads the Haskamas anyway, so they'll see my stationery there, and they'll assume that I agree with everything, and this one psak I cannot sign on to. So is this story true? I haven't even said the psak is yet, but is this whole story true about the Haskamas? I don't know. I have to find out. It's related in a number of svarim that this is the way it happened. There are other versions also. I'm not sure whether this is actually the only way to see it. I accidentally came across one thing which maybe calls it a little bit into question. One of the greatest students of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter had three prominent students, and probably within the three, the most prominent of the three was Rabbi Yitzchak Blaser, Rabbi Yitzchak Pettenberger, who was his Talmud in both major areas. Because Rabbi Yisrael was a great Gaon Halacha as well as Musar. So his Talmud, Rabbi Yitzchak Blaser, was his Talmud in Musar, and he wrote the Sefer Koch Ve'or, especially Elul Tishrei time. It's a very important Sefer. Rashiv Karen Biavni used to refer to him as Halamdan Shal Musar. big bar mussar in a special way. And he also was his Talmud in Halacha, so he wrote a very important sefer of Shailos and Tshuvas, which Shechter calls a knockout sefer of Tshuvas, called the Tshuvas Pri Yitzchak. So in the Tshuvas Pri Yitzchak, he has his acknowledgments at the beginning, and he mentions his great Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael of Salant, and he writes his gratitude to him. He says, even though I don't have a haskama from him, because his derech was not to give haskamas, but he was very supportive of the sefer. So maybe he didn't give haskamas to anyone. I guess if there was somebody who you would have thought for sure would have a haskama from him, it would have been Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer. So I don't know if that calls into question this whole story. There are other aspects to consider. But in any event, there is this machlokas that is the topic of this whole legend here, of this whole discussion. So what is the machlokas? What was this controversial psak that was so significant that possibly led to the lack of a haskama from Yisrael Salanter and the Chafetz Chaim? So we could call this the story of Joe. Okay, so imagine Joe. Joe is a very happy man. Joe has a big, comfortable, easy chair. He's lounging on it. He has, on one hand, a big bag of pretzels. On the other hand, he's got a big bottle of soda. He's got a widescreen TV. He's watching the game. He is a very happy man. Gets a phone call on his cell phone. Who's calling? It's Bob. Bob is his best friend in the whole world. Even better, life is great. He answers the phone. Bob says, Joe, I got to talk to you. I've been taking some beginner's Judaism class. So I learned some things. Apparently, first of all, you're not supposed to say bad things about people, Lashon Hara or something they call it. Who knew? And apparently also, if you do something wrong to someone before Yom Kippur, you have to ask them for forgiveness. So about that, here's the story. All these years that we've been friends, I've been telling people, lots and lots of people, that I don't really like you, and I find you annoying, and your jokes aren't funny, and I hang out with you only because you pay for lunch. But I'm really sorry. So I hope you'll forgive me. So Joe will probably forgive, because Joe is a nice guy. But I can guarantee you that when he hangs up the phone, he's much less happy than he was before he answered the phone. So did Bob do the right thing in asking for mechila? What do you think? Take a quick vote. What do you think? Did Bob do the right thing?
I'm not sure if it depends on... you say he's not less happy now. I'm not sure if that's
right.
A factor.
Yeah, you don't think so?
I don't know. I'm not sure if...
So you vote for Bob.
Depends how you what the considerations are, but I'm not sure if the considerations are, is Joe going to be happy about it?
No, you don't think that's a consideration at all?
Having Bob.
All right, so we'll talk about that. Any other vote? Right now you're voting with Bob.
No.
No, okay, you're abstaining.
Abstaining.
Oh, you got to wait for more evidence. Anyone else? Anyone have a vote here? Joe's, was Bob right? Was he wrong?
Did the right thing.
All right, this is interesting. It's not usually the reaction I got. So far, I got 1.5 votes for Bob and no votes against him. So, okay, so 2 votes for Bob. Nobody else wants to weigh in here? No feelings about this? Okay, usually... one for Joe. Well, Joe's not really a player here. But are you against Bob or are you pro-Bob? Did Bob do the right thing or not? Sorry, against Bob. Okay. So, you against Bob. Okay, 2 votes against Bob. So, you. Sorry?
Joe went to nerd.
Right. Joe would not have known anything, so he's not really a decider here. So, usually what I see is that it's overwhelming that most are against Bob, and that there's 1 or 2 who support Bob, which probably actually is a good sample size because it parallels really what you find in the postgame. The later poskim of the past century, because this is essentially the machlokes, assuming we portrayed everything correctly. We'll see, maybe there may be some variables that are questionable, but broadly drawn, this seems to be the question, that it sounds like from the Sefer Chofetz Chaim, that one is obligated to ask for mechila, even if the victim did not know about the Lashon Hara. Not in all circumstances, important to point out. We'll come back to qualify this a little bit. But, on the surface, this is what he says, that if a person did not know, that does not exempt the offender. He still has to ask for mechil. While Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's position was chas v'shalom, there is a prohibition in the Torah, here's in Parshas Behar, of onas devarim. You're not allowed to inflict emotional pain on someone else. So what right do you have, just because you want to get this off your chest, you want to get a kapara, so you're going to devastate someone else, you're going to hurt their feelings to such a degree, can't do it? That's a prohibition of onas devarim. And on the surface, this seems to be the machlokes between the two of them. So, who's the first? So, right?
According to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, then is that you don't need to do it?
Oh, so that's an important detail. So, on the surface, it seems that he's saying this is not a kula, but this is a chumrah. He's saying that essentially you do need to, but you can't, because to do so would involve such an avera. So that's one of the many reasons why lashon hara is a good avera to avoid, because it is uniquely complicated. We should mention that, of course, none of us really successfully avoid it all the time. That's what the Gemara says in Bava Basra, speaking of lashon hara by groups. It says that the Jews, that kulam ba'avak lashon hara, that all of them occasionally have some kind of lashon hara. So it's hard to really be free of it, but it has a lot of challenges, and this is one of the challenges that it's not so easy to deal with. We'll go into more details about this, just because you're asking the question now. So I had the opportunity actually to discuss this with Rav Asher Weiss a few weeks ago, and I asked him what he thought about this machlokas. I later saw that he did write about this in the Sefer on Chumash, that he said that he thinks they're both wrong. And we'll get into more details about this, that he disagrees with the Chafetz Chaim that you can't ask for mechila, but he disagrees with this nekudo as far as Rabbi Yisrael Salanter is concerned, the implication that you're trapped, that there's no mechila, there's no kapara for this person. He thinks you do get a kapara, that kapara is contingent on mechila, when mechila is the right thing to do. But if mechila is not a viable route, so then that does not hold back your kapara. So that's where he thought that both positions had what to disagree with. Hi.
In the asking mechila doesn't necessarily mean to say what you said.
Okay, so let's talk about that. So are there other routes here? Kind of compromise approaches. So there is a discussion, it seems to be what you're suggesting, that maybe we could say that we could take advantage of a less than ideal sociological reality. That what we have nowadays in terms of how we ask mechila, we're sometimes kind of frozen in a grade school mentality about how to do it. If you learn Hilchos Mechila, so you'll see that it's really supposed to be specific and targeted and genuine. And you say that, look, last week I punched you in the nose, and I realize now that that was probably not the right thing to do, and you didn't want that, so I hope you'll forgive me, and I'm unlikely that we'll do it again. So that's closer to what we're talking about with the Mechila Erev Yom Kippur. But the process that we find sociologically is that people run around kind of on autopilot, and they say, Yemochumi, 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 so without really thinking about it. So there are those who suggest, Moshe Sternbach has an essay about this, and Rachel Mawarman has an essay about this, that perhaps we can take advantage of this scenario, and we could say that on Erev Yom Kippur, go up to the individual and request a general mechila, and that should address the situation. Of course, it's only going to work around Yom Kippur time. If you call the guy up the day after Purim, and you say, hi, how you doing? Are you mocking me for anything I may have done? So they'll probably realize that you had a Levi Nixuda, and who knows what happened. So it's only going to work within this context. It's interesting that you actually find the discussion about this among the Talmidim of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So we mentioned before, Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer, there's an exchange of letters between him and another one of the three great Talmidim, Rav Naftali Amsterdam. Assume he's the one who the street is named after over here. That Tali Amsterdam had a letter that he wrote back to Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer, who had been moving on from one Rabbanus to another city, And he was concerned that maybe he had spoken Lashon Hara about some of the Balabatim, who knows. So he was trying to think what to do. And Rav Naftali Amsterdam said that maybe since you're moving anyway, it's not so surprising to say when you move from one town to the next, listen, if I did anything to offend anyone, I hope you're mochel. And that could address it. So you do find even there, the Talmidim of Yisrael Salanter having such a discussion. As some of the later Sfarim point out, though, it's hard to imagine it's a perfect solution, because that could work for your basic garden variety Lashon Haras, the kind of Lashon Haras that everybody speaks. Okay, so then maybe this type of a general Mechila could work. But if there really is something out there that was really unusually damaging, and the person doesn't know about it, so the idea that general mechila, it seems like it's being obtained under false pretenses. It's hard to imagine that outside of a very technical understanding of what's going on, that that's really going to be effective. So it's a little questionable just how much that's going to work. Again, you may not have better options, but you have to wonder how effective that is. Question about that?
Would you have the same focus if it was like a Yibia Mikdas?
Yeah, question of degree, although you'll see that's how some do suggest is possibly the middle path there, but theoretically it's all a question of degree. Hi.
Yes, I was going to ask that in this generic type of mechila, is it just like, I wouldn't say like a formality, but is it like a magic formula, or are we saying that like...
That's the thing, it kind of sounds like it is if you take this approach, right? So that's why it's hard to imagine that it's so effective. Somebody really doesn't know what they're saying when they're mochliu, because they don't have any picture of what happened to them. It's a little, it makes it sound like it's a magic formula, that's the thing. So that's why it's a little, maybe from a very technical perspective, it's the best it can do, but it's hard to be so satisfied with that. Hi.
What's the problem of asking for like a sweeping general mechila? Like, why is that not for sure?
Well, because the question is, if the person doesn't know that there actually is something that happened to them that's significant, I imagine in any other area of halacha, let's say, you know, you incurred a big monetary problem for somebody else, and you say, by the way, you release me from any kind of debts I may have to you, and he doesn't know that you have a real debt, you know, that there's really some significant monetary damage you caused to them. Again, you know, to go back to Bava Kamma, right? The person thinks, yeah, you had somebody over for, let's say, imagine you had somebody over in your house for a month. And on their way out, they say, by the way, are you mochel if they did anything? Okay, they took some extra ketchup, you know, whatever. They you know, didn't close the soda, whatever it is, you know, and it got flat. But you know, so the kind of fellow, you think, okay, that's what you're asking. And, you know, they don't know that you trashed the basement before leaving. So there's $20,000 of damage. And you said, are you mochel? You know, it's hard to imagine that's really a genuine mechila. So that's, you have to wonder how well this really... Again, what are your other options? We'll try to talk about that, but it's a question to ask. Hi.
Wouldn't it be invalid, though, or it just wouldn't be nice?
If you want a very technical approach, if it's really not effective, I mean, it may be invalid. If the person really doesn't have any idea what he's being mochel, you know, it's valid to the extent that it's valid. It could be a question of degree, but if it's really under false pretenses or the person really doesn't know, you have to wonder how much it accomplishes. Maybe, again, if you take a very technical view, you know, theoretically, there could be some room for it, but I can understand why somebody wouldn't be totally satisfied. There's a different approach. If you read the... Hi?
No, isn't that the whole idea of being specific? The idea that to the extent...
You should really address the issue.
Really knows, and therefore he can grant your mechila, but the person doesn't know... It's not, I mean...
You're saying so there shouldn't be a need,
valid,
should
you know.
It shouldn't be valid, or it shouldn't be a need
no,
for it?
No, it should not. I mean, if the person was not aware, you know, so how can you say that you get a mechila with something that
so
you're
yeah,
not
so that's,
aware?
Yeah, so that's a question.
I mean, like...
Right, that's a question. We had the opportunity in Shir a little bit to talk about last week, back in Bava Kamma Shir, about the question of somebody steals something from somebody, and then they are embarrassed to acknowledge it, so they slip it back into the guy's wallet without him knowing. So is that effective? Effective tashlumim, but what about the obligation to ask for mechila? Rambam says, yeah, the Mishnah says, you don't have to ask for mechila. So it's a question how effective that is. Moshe Feinstein has a truth about it. Hi.
Barring the case of once you shame rap, so then wouldn't a person want to give mechila anyway, even if it was a serious matter.
So you say maybe we should say as an umdana that if he really could trust that this person is doing whatever he possibly can to fix the situation, so that maybe we could say that we can rely on the chazaka that Klal Yisrael are not the achzarim, and therefore they would want to be mochel, so maybe you don't even have to ask. Maybe the general mechila doesn't even add anything to that. So we'll try to see a few more angles to see how much we can fit in time-wise. But what are some other approaches? To mention one other, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, they published many years ago a sefer of his Shiurim on the Rambam, Parach Mat Aaron, and there he has this whole discussion about the whole story about Rav Shaul Salanter and Chofetz Chaim. And he writes, like Rav Shaul Salanter says, he can't ask for mechila in this case. Says what you should do is you have to try to counteract it with positive information, which of course is easier said than said. You know, the whole point, like we started with the feathers, it's not so simple to undo the damage. But he writes that this is the only mahalach you have here, because a mechila is not really a viable approach. Others who discuss this bring up the point, by the way, that it could be that if to counteract the impact you need to say something that's not 100% true, there's a good case to be made that you're allowed to do that, because the Gemara's position, Mutar Lishanos Bifnei HaShalom, that in matters of peace it's permissible to deviate from the 100% factual truth. So this would presumably be in this category, and that might be a scenario would be Mutar. Hi.
I can't think of what the issue is called, but like if you invite someone to a wedding which you know they can't come, it's
Knevis Das.
Knevis Das, right. Yeah. So now I'm not telling this guy that I spoke shocking or shocking about him. I'm now doing him favors.
Mm.
So he thinks we're even, and now I'm doing him favors, and now he thinks, oh, what a good guy.
If he hears you're going around saying good things about him.
Meaning now he doesn't have a clue that I spoke shocking about him.
That's an interesting. You're assuming that, I mean, which could be the case, you're saying that if he happens to be aware that you're going around saying nice things about him, and he thinks you're doing it just because you're a nice guy,
sure,
and really you're doing it because you've got a mess to clean up. So that's interesting. That's a challenge that could be. Others have pointed out that maybe there's another challenge here, that the Gemara says that you have to be careful not just saying bad things, you have to be careful when you say good things about someone, because it may provoke a rebuttal. The person you're speaking to might say, oh, you think he's so great, I can tell you some stories. So some people pointed out maybe it's even more likely in this kind of scenario, right? So now, last week you said terrible things about him, now you're coming around saying good things about him. So the people you're talking to might say, really, didn't you tell us last week about how terrible he was, and I was adding on how even worse he is, you know, I thought that's our position on this guy, what are you saying, he's great now, you know. So it is a risky plan, so it has to be done b'chachma for both reasons. And already starts off challenging. Like we said, I think the recurring message here is Lashon Hara is a really good avera to avoid. It's really not simple to undo. But in any event, so with those mahalchim, so there is a question in general, what is the approach and who do we agree with here? So there are many, we took a little poll before, many really side with the Rav Shaul Salanter position here, although there are those who do agree with the Chafetz Chaim, but many side with Rav Shaul Salanter. I think I read in the Art Scroll kids biography of Rav Shaul Salanter, if I remember correctly, I keep forgetting to check. I think I many years ago read this in that biography, that someone asked Rav Aaron Cutler, that I haven't mentioned this yet, that the Chafetz Chaim's position, he didn't make it up, he interpreted that from Rabbeinu Yonah. So someone asked Rav Aaron Cutler, how could Rav Shaul Salanter argue on the Rishon, argue on Rabbeinu Yonah? So reportedly Rav Aaron Cutler's response was that Rav Yisrael Tanahu Polik, he was like a Rishon, he was such a giant in this area, so he's like a throwback to the earlier generations, he was on a level to argue on Rabbeinu Yonah. I mean, presumably shot is he really understood Rabbeinu Yonah differently, which is also a part of the whole discussion here, because it's a question, first of all, who paskins like the Chafetz Chaim and who doesn't, but it's a question actually whether the Chafetz Chaim paskins like the Chafetz Chaim, because there is what seems to be a stira between what it says in the Chafetz Chaim And what it says in another very well-known sefer, authored by the Baal HaChatos Chaim, and that would be the Mishneh Berurah, right? So presumably many people are learning Mishneh Berurah now, Hilchos Yom Kippurim, I would imagine. So if you are learning that section, it's in the Tav Reish Vav, Hilchos Mechila, so you might see that the Mishneh Berurah quotes approvingly the view of the Magen Avraham. And the Magen Avraham writes that you have an obligation to ask Mechila, yes, but if the person you're talking to is going to be embarrassed because you are saying things to them, so then you should not do it. So it sounds very much like Rabbi Saul Salanter's position there. Like he's endorsing the view that you cannot ask Mechila at the expense of the Onos Devarim of the one you're trying to get forgiveness from. Question about that?
Yeah, doesn't Shemta always say that it's hard to
That's a question itself, how you address those things. There's a couple of different paths, possibly, in terms of trying to figure out whether it's reconcilable. There are a number of suggestions in Svarim that you can find to try to uphold both. They're mostly difficult, largely because they don't fit with the language of either Sefer. One of the suggestions, for example, is that what's going on here is that in the Chafetz Chaim, he says you should ask Mechila just overall for the Lashon Hara you spoke about them, but the Mishneh Berurah is saying you shouldn't go into specifics which will cause them embarrassment. So if that is indeed the position, then you could actually maybe understand all the more so Rabbi Saul Salanter's objection, because if you really want to drive someone crazy, then a good way to do it is to come up to them and say, I've been speaking lots of Lashon Hara about you, but you don't need to know what it is, but I've just been saying horrible things to everyone, so I hope you'll be mochel me. So that's really going to keep them up at night. So it makes the machlokas perhaps even more stark. So it's a question how exactly and if one can reconcile the two positions, the Chafetz Chaim and the Mishneh Berurah, but that's a discussion you can find a lot written about what seems to be a contradiction here between the two Svarim, and it contributes to the overall question of who exactly do we Paskin like. Rav Huttner, in one of his essays, was published in the Sefer Zikaron for the Pachad Yitzchak, so he writes that, I'm running out of time, so he writes that he agrees with Rabbi Saul Salanter, and I think this is actually compatible with what Rav Asher Weiss said, that you can't ask for Mechila, that's for sure, he says, but he thinks that you don't need to ask for Mechila, that the whole point here is, maybe this might be changing up the way he said, I think the general idea is that the process of Mechila is an act of tshuva, because when you sinned against someone, so you didn't factor in their feelings and you just did whatever you wanted to do, and now you're not asking Mechila because you're so worried about their feelings. So that itself is a kiyum in the goal. Normally you ask Mechila to show you do care about their feelings, but here if Mechila is going to hurt their feelings, so you're going to not do it in order to preserve their feelings. So that itself is the purpose of Mechila. So in this case, that's the appropriate route, which I think is along the lines of what Rav Asher Weiss writes in the Sefer on Chumash, that in this case, Mechila is not an appropriate path. It's going to cause more harm than good. So therefore, it's not going to be ma'aki of the process, because that's not what you're supposed to do, and the process has to exist without it. Hi.
That rationale is sort of predicated on the idea that the obligation for Mechila is, you know, it's for you. It's for you. You're rectifying something, and it's not like a zechus of a taina that the person that you...
Okay, so let's see. You know, it's interesting. We're going to have the zechus of a taina the next speaker, because there's a lot more to say about this. But let's see. So just to try to quickly address some of those points. So one point that's important to point out that very often gets glossed over in discussions of this machlokas, and I'll confess, when I first wrote about this topic like 20 years ago, I myself glossed over this nakuda, so I think it's very often gets missed, and it's important to point out because it makes the Chafetz Chaim's position much more understandable. Still, one might disagree strongly, but this nakuda is important. He doesn't write that any time you ask, anytime you speak Lashon Hara about somebody and they don't know, you're going to have to tell them and get them all upset. He does distinguish between different types of Lashon Hara. He says that when the Lashon Hara is successful, you know, meaning that it actually does some damage. So then that's where you have to go and tell the person what you did. But if you didn't have any impact, nobody cares what you say anyway, no one's listening. So he doesn't say that any time you say something not nice, you have to then inform the person and get the mechila. So if you think about it that way, it does significantly narrow the issue and make it a lot more understandable. Again, one still might side with Rabbi Shlomo Salanter and say, even in such a case, you shouldn't do it. But it makes the Chofetz Chaim's position, I think, more sympathetic and more understandable. And now that I looked again at the Menachas Asher and Vayikra, I see that Rabbi Asher Weiss addresses that also. And he says that for that reason, it's much less of a practical machlokas, because the scenarios where you've actually done significant damage with your Lashon Hara and the victim doesn't know about it, those are less frequent. So there's lots of Lashon Hara the victim won't know about, but it's also probably likely that it didn't do so much damage. So the scenarios where you A, did damage and the person doesn't know about it, that's a much smaller group of scenarios. I think the machlokas is not as practical as it sounds like.
Do you suggest that we take advantage of the people who say that you can send out those like mass generic messages and like ask them, like presuming we don't have any big things that we've caused someone mass distress and they don't know about it, is that the best way to do it?
Well, that anyway, you know, when you know that there's something you actually did to hurt someone, so then ideally, and they know about it, so then ideally it should be specific. But if you don't know, and they don't know, have anything that they're upset about, so then it doesn't hurt to ask a general mechila. It hurts only in the sense that it lessens your appreciation for what's really going on. And if you just do it totally on autopilot, so then you value less that it's a meaningful thing. So that's an issue. But otherwise, to try to cover your bases in a way that's the best you can do, so that shouldn't hurt. And then the question is, even if you do have a significant Lashon Hara here, so we said before that it's not clear how much the general mechila is going to help, but it doesn't necessarily hurt either, but tziruf it being the best you can do, so then that may still be an indicated path. So there's a lot more to say about this, to make some general points. So this point, the Chofetz Chaim's distinction, so he can't win with the Pachad Yitzchak, because Rav Futner argues on that too. So he argues on him from both sides. He disagrees with his whole position, and he holds like Rav Yisrael Salanter. But he says also he doesn't buy this distinction between harmful and non-harmful Lashon Hara. He thinks it's always harmful. It's always going to have some impact. And therefore, that's just worth knowing, that it detracts from the V'yahav t'l'reach kamocha. It takes away from the love that this person is supposed to receive from you. So therefore, all Lashon Hara is harmful. You shouldn't delude yourself into thinking there's any harmless Lashon Hara. It's not the case. But still, the position of Rav Yisrael Salanter is the correct position in his understanding. We'll say a little bit more about that, time permitting, in a second. It's also interesting to note that the Chofetz Chaim also addresses the question of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, which is a significant aveira in its own right. So if you heard Lashon Hara and you were Makabalit, so how do you do tshuva for that? So there he says one should not ask Mechila for that, and rather one should simply in quotes here, simply remove it from your heart. So that sounds like when the Gemara says about Mashem Lekecha Shol Mimach Kim Liyura, and the Gemara asks what Yira is a small thing. So like, this is a small thing, just to undo it. That goes back to our original statement that it's not so easy to just click unbelief and to just turn it off. But I guess Lagabe Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Gemara says, Lagabe Chofetz Chaim, that was something that was a path that you can decide not to be Makabalit anymore, and that will put you on the path tshuva, as far as that's concerned. So it's an important point, because I did once witness an incident of somebody not addressing this properly and going up to a rabbi and asking him mechila for having heard Lashon Hara about him. Do not do that. So that's two steps removed from even the Chofetz Chaim's position, because the Chofetz Chaim is saying even if you're Makabal Lashon Hara, you shouldn't ask Mechila. Here, this person wasn't saying he was Makabal, he said he heard Lashon Hara, which is not automatically the Isra of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. So that's really a way to hurt someone's feelings for no reason. So that nobody would say is a good idea. So it's important to keep in mind also that the path for the recipient, even if he actually did the Aveira of Kabbalah slash Nahara, is not through trying to ask for a Mechila. So just to give also a little bit more perspective in 3 minutes, so there are different conceptual paths one can take to try to understand what the Machlokas here is about. And just as a kind of footnote for further Ian, so the question of what's the nature of Lashon Hara could be an issue here. Is Lashon Hara about the midah of being negative and gossipy, or is it about damage that you do through speech? Because if it's about the midah, maybe again,